Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
I know we've been gone for Fridays for a while, but this is the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and now you know when we started 5 o'clock.
Start spreading the news.
Oh, that means Schomburg Stu is here.
I'm in the house, and that's good to hear the man singing that song.
Oh. All right. Well, if you want to come to the podcast and talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Now, remember, Wednesday's blog went up in the afternoon, but it got up there. Hopefully, tomorrow's will be up in the morning. But, you know, hey, you never know how that's going to go. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, well, you know, now maybe that Stu is going to be here regularly on Fridays, we'll be able to get him on Twitter now. But for right now, I'm the only guy out there. You can reach me at Burktime if you want to do that. But there you go. We're rolling along. So happy to have you here. I'm glad you agreed to do this. I'm sorry I made you do this. I don't know how this works out. So
well, I appreciate it, John. And we have a lot of important sport things that happened today, like the trading of Justin Holliday, for example, for the Bulls. And that was a major.
Yeah. Did they end up releasing Cameron Payne, or did they hang on to him because they made the deal? I never saw an official move there.
Well, I heard rumors they were trying to get rid of him also, and, of course, that's really going to make a big impact on the team for the rest of the season if that happens, though.
Yeah, he was got – Dan hated him so much. I don't know what – Cameron Payne ever did to Dan, but oh wow, Dan just had a huge, huge dislike for him. So, just one of those, things.
I wonder what Dan thought of Mr. Parker.
Well, you know what's weird? I know, you know, the first couple of years when he was up in Milwaukee, Dan picked him up in our fantasy league. You know, he actually paid for him in the auction league. So he learned, you know, really kind of quickly what he was in for there with good old Jabari and how things were going to go there. So it's
The funny thing about him is that he's pretty outspoken about the fact that he doesn't really care for defense.
Really, he sounds like the perfect guy for the NBA nowadays, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's for sure. And he has averaged, what does he average, 12, 13 points a game when he does play a full game for the Bulls?
Yeah, you know what I mean? He looks healthy, so I don't know what the problem is. I mean, unless it just is the defense. But again, that's, you know, there's no interest in anybody playing any kind of defense in the NBA now. I don't know why that would be a huge deal. I mean, as much as I dislike it and you might dislike it, we don't count anymore. We're not the demographic they're looking for, so.
No. Well, I have noticed that since Boylan took over as a coach that the scores of the Bulls games have been a lot lower scoring games than they have in the past.
Yeah, well, I know he's a little more defense-oriented. You know, he's kind of that Tom Thibodeau-type mold of a coach. So, you know, I guess that should have been expected. I don't know if he keeps the job because I don't know if he kind of fits into this new style NBA that you need. So, we'll have to see. But at this point, you know, in reality, it's better that they lose games than win games, isn't it?
I suppose so, yeah, get that draft choice. But I hate the 128, 125 games now. I just, to me, that's not basketball.
No, well, you
maybe
know,
I'm
it was
in
the
minority,
weird, you know,
though,
they,
huh?
Yeah, well, you know, they were talking last night about what a great game it was between the, you know, the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. And I, you know, and oddly, when I heard them start talking about it, they mentioned that James Harden took 23 three-point shots. And that just kind of immediately turned me off. I don't have interest in that kind of game. I mean, I would like to see a little defense played, and it's boring to watch guys just stand out there and shoot threes.
It really is. What was the final score of that game? Because I did not catch it.
I am looking it up right now. It's weird because every time I need my computer, it slows down. You know, here you go. The Rockets won 135-134 in overtime.
Oh well, at least it was an overtime one. That makes it much better.
So yeah, they had Harden did go for 40 points again. He went for 44, but yeah, he was 10-for-23 from behind the 3-point line. And a 13 for 32 overall. So oddly, that means inside the 3-point line, he went 3 of 9.
That's strange, huh? Isn't that funny?
Yeah. He did make 8 of 9 throw attempts and put up a triple double. You know, so that's all they care about. But yeah, I mean,
well,
even like the Warriors, Steph Curry had 15 threes. He had the most out of anybody on their team.
Yeah. Yeah, the Golden State doesn't seem to be as dominant this season as they have in years past.
Well, you know, you had to figure that sooner or later the NBA was going to catch up with them, right? I mean, the other teams, that's kind of how it always goes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, what you say. And when you think about that and you figure out what Michael Jordan did in his prime, winning 6 titles in 8 years – and who knows, if he didn't go play that minor league season baseball for a couple of years, it could have been 8 in a row. It very possibly could have been 8 in a row, which is unheard of.
Yeah, you know, and the weird thing is, like, I know everybody keeps talking about how, you know, they're not as good as they have been lately, but, you know, they're still 25-14 and, you know, tied right now for second place in the Western Conference. So, you know, it's not like they're, you know, the 10-28 Chicago Bulls that are, you know, going absolutely nowhere.
yeah. But 25-14 is a good winning percentage. But in years past, they would be, what, about 33-6, something like that, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're used to, 32-7. So that's a big difference. That's a big drop than they've done in previous years.
Yeah, I think it's more surprising that right now they only have the 5th best record overall. You know, it's Milwaukee, Toronto, then Denver chimes in, then Indiana is technically ahead of them right now before they fall in with the Thunder, who are, you know, they have the same winning percentage, but they played a couple less games.
Yeah.
So,
Well, of course, you know, you have to think that Indiana's in for a tough game tonight, though.
Are they playing the Bulls? So Indy's going to win by, what, about 25?
Maybe 25, 30 points, right? You figure that if you lose to Orlando by close to 30 points, you don't think you're going to have too much success playing against Indiana.
So, but, yeah, you know, I mean, obviously early we're only, you know, coming up on 40 games into the NBA season or so. But, you know, the top of the East, you know, is looking much better than it normally does. You know, I mean, it's been the Western Conference for so long, but, you know, maybe we finally got some Eastern Conference teams that can compete, you know, when we get to the finals that don't have LeBron James.
Yeah, it would be nice to see an Eastern Conference team win the NBA this season. Toronto or Milwaukee, I'd like to see Milwaukee do it.
So, yeah, and, you know, you got to wonder, you know, if Philadelphia can ever get it together. I found it humorous that a reporter mentioned that Jimmy Butler disrespected his head coach, who's Brett Brown, because he questioned the offense. I'm guessing this guy just doesn't know anything about Jimmy Butler because he's kind of that straight shooter and he does these kind of things. And at least he went to the coach and he didn't try to do it through the media or through social media.
Well, Butler's always been a feisty player, but he speaks the truth. And you can't, you have to respect him for that.
You know, yeah, I just kind of chuckled at it when I heard that because, the biggest thing that bothers me about anything is the media spins on all these things with the way they try to play it off. It probably wasn't even a big deal, but they need something to write about, so they make it out to be a big deal. We're talking about a team that, interestingly, the Sixers have the same record as the Warriors. You know, they're 2.5 games out of being the best team in the East. So if there's a little bit of controversy, hey, big deal.
Well, they'll be it in it. They'll certainly be a dominant force in the playoffs, that's for sure.
Yeah, the top five teams in the East, Milwaukee right now is on top, and then it's Toronto, Indiana, Philadelphia, and Boston. I'm not sold on Indiana competing in a finals. I'm not sure if they have the roster to do it, but the other four I think can compete if they run into a Golden State like a lot of people still expect, or even a Houston if the Rockets manage to get there. That could be a good series.
There would be, and Houston has been kind of right at the very edge of being the top team in the West for the last couple of years, and maybe this is their year.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people who still believe if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt that they win that Game 7 last year and go to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, that could have happened.
I do find it interesting that they're playing better now with Paul hurt than they were when he was on the court. Which kills my fantasy team because he was one of my top picks. So,
yeah. And I got to ask you something. Baseball always comes up with the comeback player of the year type thing. Do the other sports do that too? Basketball, hockey, football? Do they have an award like that?
They might, but I'm not sure if it's called comeback player of the year. It might have a different name or however they go about things.
Yeah, because there's one player who definitely should be considered the comeback player of the year in the NBA this season, without question.
It's not Chris Paul? Oh.
Now I would think it would be D. Rose.
Yeah, with the way he's really been playing, of course, the big question, we got to make sure he stays healthy for the final.
Yeah, well, that's, it's unfortunate. The guy really had some major injuries over the year, and he shocked me this season. I thought he was done. I guess most people did, but he's really made a tremendous turnaround.
Didn't he look it? The last few seasons, didn't he look done?
Oh, yeah. Of course he did. I thought he was out of the league already. It's a shock.
Yeah, obviously the difficult part is, the Timberwolves decided that Jimmy Butler was the guy who had to go, and now they're 17-21 and not even contending for a playoff spot.
No. I believe, by the way, that Rose got hurt a couple of games ago, but I don't know how serious it was.
Yeah, well, I know, looking at his stats here, he's only played in 32 of their 38 games, but he is averaging just under 19 points a game. So,
he's played in, 90% of the games, then, approximately.
Oddly, his three-point shooting has finally improved. He's actually shooting 46% from three-point land there, and on the plus side, he's hitting 84% of his free throws. I know he's had issues there with his career as well, so, maybe the injuries helped his shooting and he was able to work on things.
Yeah. Well, I know that his three-point shooting has always been suspect. His free-throw shooting, not quite as bad, but he certainly seems to have made a marked improvement in those areas for this season at least.
Well, how weird is it that he gets this resurgence with Tom Thibodeau, who was the guy they blamed for ruining his career?
Yeah, that is interesting. And did you hear the crowd response when he played against the Bulls at the UC a week or two ago? They were yelling MVP.
No, I don't watch him.
They were yelling MVP when FRO said one of his best games, especially in the beginning of the game. So the fans started giving him a chant.
Yeah, statistically, he's the Timberwolves' best three-point shooter, percentage-wise. So
that is quite a surprise, considering his percentage in previous seasons.
Yeah, you know, obviously the tough part is, you know, he's just going to be doing it for a bad team.
Yeah, he has not really. Thibodeau hasn't really turned the team around like everybody thought they would. Maybe a major contender and. They had a couple of seasons where they were over 500, I think, but nothing spectacular.
Well, you know, oddly, they looked like a contender last year with Jimmy Butler, and as soon as Butler got hurt, they went straight downhill and barely hung on to a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Here, I can tell you this. Derrick Rose is going to be out tonight. It says he has an ankle injury. He's been upgraded to questionable on the injury report for Friday's game against the Magic, obviously tonight, but it's also reporting here that he is out. So he's got something going on with an ankle.
Yeah, it could be a sprained ankle. And, of course, with the All-Star game coming up pretty soon, maybe he won't play in it then, as he was selected to the All-Star game.
No, they need to move him so he'll be ready for the All-Star game. So, you know. But yeah, we mentioned a couple games. Here's the rest of the NBA real quickly. You got the Jazz at the Cavaliers, the Wizards at the Heat. We mentioned the Pacers at the Bulls, the Nets at the Grizzlies, the Magic at the Timberwolves. The first game on the Mickey and Mouse Network tonight is the Mavericks at the Celtics. It's their doubleheader night. We got the Hawks at the Bucks, the Clippers at the Suns, the Knicks at the Lakers, and then the second game televised over there on the Mickey Mouse Network is the Thunder at the Trailblazers. So that could be a pretty good game. You know, Portland is hanging around in the playoff race.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Paul George in Oklahoma City is fantastic. So, you know, that starts a little late. I'm going to be asleep by the time that starts.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be staying up to watch that one.
So, you know, just kind of interesting there to see how the rest of this shakes out. And if the Bulls can get one of those top picks and grab one, you know, you're going to need number one or number two to land one of those Duke guys. So we'll have to see if the Bulls can lose enough games and get enough ping pong balls.
Yeah, well, you think that the Duke guys will go 1-2 in the draft for sure, right?
Yeah.
And the way it stands
Depending on what your need is, it'll be depending on which guy you take. Because it looks like, you know, that Zion Williamson is going to be a showstopper. And I'm drawing a blank on the other guy's name, but I think he's actually the better overall player. So, you know, and if you were interested, I had to tell you, I know you're going to go out and get the NBA League Pass to watch that Laker game. LeBron is still out tonight, so you may want to wait. It looks like he's going to miss three or four more games.
Yeah, didn't LeBron make a claim recently that he's the best NBA player in history?
Yes, he is the greatest because he beat the Warriors when they had that 72-win season, and he mentioned that Jordan never won as an underdog. And, you know, that's kind of an odd comparison. It was just the fact that Jordan was so good, he never had to be the underdog.
No,
so,
that's true. And I like Jordan's classy response that he never considered himself to be the greatest player in history because he mentioned some of the predecessors that, of course, garnered a lot of press, Russell and Bird and Chamberlain and all the other ones. And that makes sense to me. You really can't say one person is the best player in the history of the game.
Yeah, you know, as fun as it is to have the debate, I mean, how do you compare them? You know, the eras are so different. You know, in Jordan's era, they play defense. In LeBron's era, they don't.
Right. That's a big difference. So you really can't compare it. To use the cliche, you can't compare apples and oranges, right? I wish I could think of a better one than that, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you wonder how some of these guys. I mean, imagine the numbers guys like Pete Maravich would put up in this NBA if he could just stand behind the three-point line and shoot, or Jerry West.
Right, for sure.
So, you know, I mean, those guys were just, you know, monsters. Or, you know, some of the guys who maybe weren't close to that level, but, you know, George Gervin was a fantastic player. This NBA seems to fit his style. You know, kind of like a David Thompson. They were more this, and obviously they, you know, not they didn't have the, you know, West and, you know, Maravich didn't have the three-point line. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Gervin now. Did he play in the ABA? He played in the old ABA too, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, because he started with the Spurs when they were still in the ABA, and then he just came over with them. And I think David Thompson was in the ABA as well.
Seems so long ago.
You know what I mean? We
ABA
didn't even
exist.
One of us even bothered to mention Oscar Robertson. How the heck did we leave him out?
Yeah, you can't leave him out. Any of these great shooters. But it's not a league I enjoy watching anymore, really. And I'm sure you're going to be watching the NBA All-Star basketball game, because maybe both teams will get over 200 points this time.
Yeah. Well, you know what's – like, I still enjoy the competition, you know, the night before when they do the skills drill and the three-point – you know, the three-point shooting, because, you know, that actually takes a little talent. You know, you got to stand there and hit your shots.
Right.
I don't enjoy the dunk contest as much anymore, but – you know, yeah, I still, but the game itself, oh man, you can't get me far enough away from that. I just have zero interest in even paying any attention to it.
Yeah, at least the NHL has made changes to their All-Star game so that it's a little bit more of a game now than it has been in years past. But not the NBA.
Yeah, well, the NHL made their game fun. You know,
right.
they're All-Star game fun. And, I mean, obviously, you know, they're not out there playing great defense. I mean, but the goalies don't want to give up. You know, you don't want to be the goalie who gives up 10 goals in the All-Star game. So, you know, there's a little something there at least. But, yeah, I mean, the NBA, they just kind of get out of each other's way, don't they?
They do. They do. There's little defense in the regular game, so you can imagine what kind of defense there is in an All-Star game.
Yeah, I mean, none. So,
as I pointed out, I'm still waiting for a game, an All-Star game, that both teams score over 200. And they've gotten close a few times.
It's coming. You know, it's definitely coming. I mean, yeah, they are right there. So, you know, all you need is, you know, you get a guy who's hot and hitting threes, and you know that's it. You know, all of a sudden you're looking at 200.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for it to happen, and as mentioned, it's been very close a couple of times. And maybe this will be the year.
Yeah, I'm just kind of baffled by who enjoys this. You know, I'm confused on. You know, because obviously they're doing well. You know, they got the big television deal, and you know their ratings are solid. But I don't know who's watching it. You know, I mean, I know I'm not.
Yeah, and surprisingly, as bad as the Bulls are, I think their attendance is pretty much between 95% and 100%, maybe not well over into the 90s. Not a sellout. They don't get sellouts anymore, but they get fairly close. Which surprised
me. You know, again, I don't know who's going, but you know, well, I do know Dan is going to when the Lakers come to town. He's got tickets for that game.
Well, he's hoping, of course, that by that time LeBron will be back in action.
That's all he's hoping for, is LeBron is still healthy and you know, ready to go. So, you know, we have to see what the heck goes on there.
There's no question that he's a talented basketball player. You can't take that away from the guy, but I'm still not convinced he's the best ever.
No, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, he'll go down as one of the greatest of all time, and he'll have his supporters, you know, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, all these guys do. You know, I mean, that's
right.
Kind of how it, you know, works out. I mean, you know, the humorous thing now is if you were starting a team right now in the NBA, he wouldn't be your first pick. I don't even know if he gets into the top five with all the, you know, the young talent out there.
No, no. And how old is he? Is he, what, 34, 35 now? Or?
You know, I'm not – is he there yet, or is he still
little
bit –
Well, because he started
bit...
so young. He did start very young, so maybe he's not quite there. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not – let's see, 34. So, yeah, you were right on. Yeah, he just turned 34 in December, December 30th. So
he's been around a long time.
Yeah, well, yeah, he started – he, you know, he was, what, one of the guys who started at 18 or whatever it was?
Yeah.
You know,
and
so.
It's not easy to compete at that level and being so skillful for so many years, because you got to figure that running up and down the court, so many games, playoff games, has to take a toll on your body eventually.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, lucky for him, he had the body to compete. You know, we get a lot of these guys who come in and, you know, they're great players at 18 or 19, but, you know, they're not physically ready for the rigors of the NBA. I mean, LeBron came in legitimately with a football player's type body.
Yeah.
So, you know, he could handle it right from the start. I mean, you know, we see how many of these guys come in and, you know, they're tall and thin and, you know, halfway through the season, their body's just done because, you know, they're used to playing the 30-game college schedule and not the 80-plus game NBA season.
And we've talked about this before, but in all the – there's four major sports in the United States, hockey, basketball, baseball, and football. And of all those, you would think that the least contact of them all, the least dangerous, is basketball. And yet there are a tremendous amount of injuries in basketball anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to figure with all the running, you know, you're looking at your groins and your hamstrings and, you know, even your calf strains or anything to do with your feet. So,
right.
You know, you're always going to have to deal with that. I mean, I think, you know, obviously the hot button issue is concussions. You know, I think they're the league that probably has the least number of those, I would guess. You know, even less than baseball, because, you know, you can pick one up in so many different ways, not just being hit with the ball, but, you know, on a bad slide or, you know, running into a teammate
right.
or, you know, a player or, you know, anything like that. So
that, when you think about it now, that's a good point you brought up. Out of the four major sports, they're really the only one of the four that doesn't, they don't have protection for their head. They're the only ones,
right? Yeah.
And I wonder if it'll ever come to the fact, you know, the day will ever come where they'll be wearing helmets too. I doubt it.
You know, I do see a lot more guys wearing mouth guards now than I used to. When I see, like, you know, an NBA highlight or I catch a couple minutes of a game here and there, I've noticed a lot of guys, you know, wearing the mouth guards.
Which is probably a smart thing to do.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, if you actually have to try to rebound, because, you know, there still are those, you know, elbows flying around and, you know, there are some big, big guys, you know, down there.
Yeah, well,
so
when I play basketball, I always stayed away from that because, of course, I'm only about 5'8 at the best, and I didn't like those flying elbows.
Yeah, no, that was my job, go down there and knock the, you know, the smaller guys around, being a bigger guy when I played. So, you know, I wasn't super tall, but I was wide, and it was, you know, knock some guys around.
You played that, and baseball and football too, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I only played basketball in middle school because it didn't interfere with wrestling. You know, in high school, you got to make the choice. You're either a basketball player or you're a wrestler. Sadly, I probably made the wrong choice because I wasn't a very good amateur wrestler. I, you know, got beat many, many more times than I actually ever beat guys. So I may have been better trying to be a basketball player.
if they allowed a folding chair in wrestling, you might have done more matches.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that was my problem. There was just too much influence from you know, at the time in our area, it was the AWA, and I couldn't do any of those things. You know, I would get myself disqualified. And I just kind of never understood.
That's right.
They're like, but I saw this on television. You know, why can't I punch this guy? But no, yeah, you're not allowed to do that. So.
Yeah, I never realized how tough it was, but my first semester in college, University of Illinois at Chicago, you got to take a sport. And my first semester, I took wrestling, two matches. Yeah, I didn't do too well. I lost on points and was pinned once, and I was winning one game on points, but my first match, but I ran out of steam, and boy, I didn't realize how tough it was.
Yeah, the 1 year when I started in high school, we went to an off-season tournament, and you know it's a smaller thing. There were only six guys in my weight class. It was the guy who won the state championship, the guy he beat, the guy from one weight down who was moving up a weight who won the state title, the guy he beat, me, and some other guy. Yeah, I win a match. I think I got pinned in every match I had in that tournament. So I was like, yeah, okay, I still thinking I got the wrong sport here.
Yeah, no match that ended 3-2 or anything like that, or 2-1 or...
No, and they had some good matches. I just wasn't in any of them, you know,
right.
when they kind of faced off against each other. But, yeah, amateur wrestling, just not my forte, but I tried. You know,
yeah,
I guess that
okay.
Counts for something.
I guess I was okay with switches and escapes, but I didn't have the stamina to continue. But it was fun.
You know, I mean, I might have liked better, you know, if we had a gymnastics team in high school, I might have been better off in that, but we didn't have one.
Yeah, talking about gymnastics, my second semester I took tumbling, and I was good at tumbling. I almost had an A there, but in gymnastics,
see?
Forget it. Gymnastics is tough.
Yeah, you know,
I could not compete in gymnastics.
Yeah, you know, I went to public high school, so we didn't have any, you know, we didn't have, like, gymnastics or swimming or, you know, any of those kind of alternative sports.
It's hard for me to picture you on the parallel bars or on the pommel horse or doing any of that stuff in gymnastics.
Well, that's just what, you know, that was my dream as a big guy, was to do the gymnastics, you know. So.
Yeah, there's some talent there.
You know, get out there on the rings and just let it all hang out, so...
Boy, I ripped the hell out of my hands on the rings, even using that chalk stuff you put on it. And that doesn't feel too good.
Yeah, well, you know, oddly, we did gymnastics in gym class. We just didn't have a team. You know, we did all that kind of stuff, but there was just nowhere, you know, nowhere to go with it. We didn't even have a girls' team.
Not even that.
Yeah. No, it was just something, you know, the district couldn't afford. So we did not compete. You know, which was just disappointing.
Right,
but,
sure.
You know, you got to do what you got to do. So, you know, you play, you know, find something else, you're good. You know, like back then, I mean, it wasn't like now where, you know, mom and dad, but probably more dad, I would guess, than mom grabs the kid because he's good at one sport and that's the sport he does year-round. You know, I mean, I would have went ape crazy if I could have only been a baseball player 12 months a year. You know, I mean, you gotta let them try different things. But now, you know, every parent wants to cash in on whatever talent little junior or Missy has. So
yeah, if they have a talent in gymnastics and want to go into tournaments and things, that can turn out to be a very, very expensive thing for the parents to do. It's not cheap at all to go to these tournaments and pay for that and their training and everything else. That does add up.
Yeah, well, I'm working with a lady right now whose son is a very good basketball player. He's a freshman, and he's a talented high school basketball player, and he just got picked for a travel team. So they are learning very quickly how the cost adds up for these things, because it's about $500 to play this travel season.
Yeah, it certainly does add up, and they're finding out that the hard way. You know what bothers me about high school basketball now, and when I went to high school, and you probably did too, if you're in the district, you go to the high school that's in the district. But now
yeah.
They seem to get the talented basketball players to transfer at will. even state to state? Yeah, how do they do that? I mean, it doesn't seem legal to me.
No, being in Little League for years, I understand how the shadiness works of you find, the relative who lives in the right district. And, remember that Chicago team that did so well turned out to have a bunch of illegal players on it.
Right.
They
lost the finals,
I'm guessing this has a lot like that. Auntie Jane lives in the right school district, and that's the address you put down, there's some finagling going on there where, they get – it's kind of like college. It's like they're out there recruiting high school players.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And to me, it's amateur sport should be an amateur sport. And, of course, like Aki pointed out, there's no more amateur sports in college anymore, right? Is there?
Oh, God, no. No, not at all. I hate when I see something, this is the number one recruit coming out of high school. Well, I don't care. He's 16. I don't care who the best eighth grade basketball player is. so what? He's 12 or he's 13. So,
I wonder,
how does that matter?
Do some colleges actually start looking at these kids when they're 12, 13 years old?
Yeah, I believe some of them do. They see these guys or they get the buzz about these guys or I can understand maybe, if you're a freak of nature and, you're that 7-foot-tall freshman, people want to kind of check you out and see how your game might be developing. But, look at the ball kids. You can just kind of look at how – they came out. The youngest one was a sophomore or a junior, and they were talking about him about being the best one in the family.
Yeah.
And somehow I believe he's back in high school, even though he played professionally overseas. I don't know how that works out. I mean, you're not allowed to. You lose all your amateur status the minute you take that payday.
You would think so, but somehow they got around it.
So,
and how, I don't know.
Yeah, I just, they can say he played for free or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But the purity is gone. It's even gone in high school to some extent. Like we're pointing out that the excitement, I mean, when these kids, and we're talking about that before, I've seen kids transfer from state to state in high school.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess if you're the best, you want to go. And I know now there are those non-traditional high schools, I guess you would call them, where, they're not even called high schools. They're called academies. So I'm assuming their enrollment is much different than a regular high school. They can probably go out and recruit these kids and go get these kids from – pretty much wherever they want.
What about academically, though?
No, does anybody care about that?
Except us.
Yeah. You brought up D. Rose earlier. I mean, remember Memphis got ended up getting, he went to the University of Memphis. They ended up going on probation because somebody else took his ACTs and SATs for him.
Yeah. Of course, he always denied it.
Yeah. So it was just kind of like, oh, okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, as we've talked before about some of these guys who, a minuscule percentage of these guys are going to make it into the pros, no matter what sport, football or basketball. You would think that if they get a scholarship, at least take advantage of it and try to get an education out of it, something that'll help you if you don't make it in the pro level, and most of them won't. But it doesn't appear that is always the case.
No. Well, I can guarantee you that any football underclassman who's declared for the NFL draft is no longer going to class. His college career is over. He's getting ready for the NFL draft. He won't be going to take his you know, his psych final or whatever final he had coming up. He, you know, they're never going to see him again. He did his job at the university, and, you know, he's on to whatever his next career is. I mean, some of these guys were skipping bowl games for, you know, the first time I think I'd ever really saw that, because they didn't want to get hurt.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm hoping that Stanford, Northwestern, and Notre Dame still hold some kind of academic standards for their athletes.
Yeah, I did humorously see, I don't know if you noticed this one, that Michael Jordan declared for the NFL draft today.
Is that right?
Yeah, of course, technically it was the Michael Jordan from Ohio State University who's the offensive lineman. But I did get a kick out of that when I saw the name. I was like, hey, all right.
Yeah, he's coming back at the age of, what, 55 or 60 to play in the NFL.
So, oh, God. But, all right, you know, I wanted to bring this up with you. I actually forgot to do it with Dan yesterday. Lately, on Thursdays, we've been making Dan pick one sports movie to watch over the weekend. So I was kind of wondering, you know, on your watch, if you had that sports movie to pick, what are you pulling out? Now, I know Linda picks your weekend movie, so you don't get to do that. But if you're,
right,
you know, if you're hunting down a movie, just a sports movie, and it can be, you know, any type of sports movie. I mean, what do you go for?
Well, I can think of one right now that I always thought was a great movie compared to some of the other sports movies, and that was Hoosiers. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest with you. I thought I was going to get, you know, Searching for Bobby Fischer or, you know, something like that. But, yeah, okay. So...
Yeah, well, I don't think that Searching for Bobby Fischer would have that excitement that you would get from watching Hoosiers.
Well, you know, I did see there, I was kind of looking for them. I saw there's one now. I've seen Searching for Bobby Fischer, but it was, you know, probably 94 or 5 after it came out.
Right.
Have you seen this Pawn Sacrifice that came out in 2014? Have you been keeping up on these Bobby Fischer movies?
Yes, I saw that one, and I believe that the player, the actor who plays Boris Spassky in that movie is Lev Schreiber, who plays the lead role in one of my favorite series, Ray Donovan. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's on Showtime.
Yeah.
But I believe he played Boris Spassky, and I can't remember who played Bobby Fischer in that movie.
Toby McGuire is Bobby Fischer, and you are correct. It is Schreiber as Boris Spassky. So you're right on there.
Yeah, and Schreiber, who plays a tough guy, fantastically tough guy, and Ray Donovan, was almost unrecognizable in that role as Boris Spassky. And by the way, I got to tell you, you brought up Searching for Bobby Fischer. One thing always bothered me about that movie, they changed the ending. Yeah, they had him winning the final game. Yeah, they had him winning the final game in the tournament that he was in, searching for Bobby Fischer. Well, that's not true. The game ended up in a draw. And, of course, being a chess aficionado, they had to do that for dramatic emphasis, maybe. I don't know. But that final game, that famous game, was wound up in a draw. A fortunate draw for Fish. Yeah, of course, it was not Bobby Fischer in them. It was Waitskin who they were talking about, his son, who was in that movie. It wasn't really about Bobby Fischer. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was not about Bobby Fischer. It was about the son of the journalist who becomes a top-notch tournament player. And that's what that one was about. They do try to find Bobby Fischer to talk to him, but they never do.
Yeah, so that one's not as much as a sports movie. I actually didn't realize he was born in Chicago.
Yes. Yeah, he was born in Chicago in 1943. I think he moved to New York after 4 or 5 years. Of course, as you well know, and I'm sure the audience knows, and And you know that I played Bobby Fischer in 1964. Did you know that?
You won. Oh.
No.
Yeah,
no,
you mentioned it to me before.
Yeah, no. He gave a simultaneous exhibition in Chicago in 1964. And he plays multiple players at one time. He played 71 players in that particular time. It was at the old Edgewater Beach Hotel in Chicago, long gone now. And somehow I was able to get a draw. And actually written up in a couple of books, amazingly, a couple of chess anthologies actually published that game. Of course, I got nothing for it, but it was a fortunate draw. It was a fortunate draw on my part, of course. Exciting game, a very exciting game, and one of the last ones. Almost all the games are over by the time ours finally finished. But so even when I'm gone, John, my name will go forever because I'm in those anthologies.
There you go. Now, do we know when the last time he played a match was? Is there?
Yes, we do.
You know, a record of that?
Well, you talk about when he played his last chess game, official game, not exhibition. Well, of course, he won the title in 72, and after he won the title and beat Spassky, he virtually retired from chess because they wouldn't accede to his demands. He wanted a certain format with draws not counting, and no one would agree to it, and so he abdicated. But 20 years later, oddly enough, he had a rematch with Boris Spassky. And he won that rematch, but they said he was very rusty, and both Spassky and Fischer hadn't played for many years, and the then world champion Kasparov could have probably handled both of them quite easily, because if you don't play for 20 years, you're going to be rusty.
Yeah.
But he did win that match.
Now there's a couple more. I never even heard of these. There's Bobby Fischer against the world from 2011, which they list as a biography. And then 2009, they have a me and Bobby Fischer. That's also listed as a documentary. Biography. I haven't seen either of those. Have you came across those?
Bobby Fischer against the world. I don't know if I saw that one or not, but that's based upon a book that was written about the vaccine stuff that took place before he finally agreed to terms to play Spassky for the world championship in 1972. No one would agree to his terms, and he backed out at the last minute, and they said he was a coward, and he wouldn't go to Reykjavik, Iceland to play, and all these backstage shenanigans, newspaper reporters and photographers chasing him around New York City, and he finally made the flight, and oddly enough, he was disrespectful to Spassky, so they were going to cancel the match anyway, but they finally had it. And he lost the first game. He lost the first game. He made a blunder. It should have been a draw. And he was forfeited the second game because he didn't play. So they thought the match was over with. But down 2-0, he decided to continue and wound up winning decisively and becoming the first, official American world champion. Many thought that Paul Morphy in the 1800s was a world champion, but that's a different story for a different time. He certainly was an odd character, and he grew odder as he got older, and a nasty individual, a very, very nasty individual, his politics and everything else, but we don't want to talk about that, do we?
People can look that up online if they're interested in that part of his life. I was just curious about the movies.
Yeah. I may have seen a documentary on YouTube, I'm trying to remember now, but he certainly was an odd character, and as they say, his politics and his ranting and ravings were pretty reprehensible. But he's a great player, at one time considered by many to be the greatest in the history of the game, and I'm not sure if that's true anymore. But he certainly was terrific player.
It's kind of weird because it seems like there's a lot of people who end up being great at what they do that just end up being total, I guess, jerks, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
You kind of wonder how that happened.
Yeah, there's certainly some people in baseball, for example. I never was too fond of Pete Rose. as a human being.
Yeah.
Who was that Philadelphia pitcher who has some odd ideas and I forgot his name. The guy who had the blood on his sock in that one famous game.
Oh,
he was tough.
Coach Boone.
Remember his name?
Yeah. Yeah, Curt Schilling.
That's right. That's right. And he is another unpleasant human being, to say the least.
You'll find this interesting, then. I heard somebody today saying that, you know, Hall of Fame voting's coming up, and they believe Schilling has a chance to get in this year.
Yeah, well, his ranting and ravings, I'm sure, didn't help him over the course of the last few years. And
yeah, I don't know. I just don't. I don't vote him as a Hall of Famer. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't vote him in. If you hear some beeping,
you know,
that means I'm pre-setting the oven here.
Uh-oh.
So, see,
I could do something, John.
It took me many years to learn how to do that, but I now know how to do that, and I could pop a frozen pizza into the oven and like anybody else.
There you go.
Of course, it only took me about 80 years to learn that. Yeah, as you mentioned, I know you're skilled. You're a skilled chef. I always have that. I'm always jealous that you're talented in that area, and you can whip up these meals yourself, and I am not as good as that.
Yeah, it would be cook. I'm not a trained chef. I'm just a home cook who had two really good teachers. My father was actually a chef. So
is that right? Wow.
That's where I get that. Yeah.
Well, you see that,
you had that
free training. And I know that you've whipped up some interesting concoctions that you told me about, and most of them seem to come out pretty well. Of course, there's been a clunker or two also, right?
You what?
You had a couple of clunkers, but mostly your stuff turns out pretty well.
There's always a frozen pizza in the fridge, you know, in the freezer, just in case, you know, something goes downhill. You know,
that's always good to have that backup. You got to have that backup, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the story about my father that I always like to tell is, you know, he ended up being a cook in the Navy. And he was actually on a battleship that left for Hiroshima to get into the war a day or two before they dropped the bomb over there.
Wow.
So luckily he never had to do any fighting. He was on his way. Well, as a cook, he wouldn't have done any fighting anyways, but, you know, the ship would have got attacked, and that would have been bad.
Yeah.
He was headed that way to get into the war, and a day or two after they left, they decided to, you know, bomb Japan, and, you know, they ended up just going over to patrol. They didn't have to do any fight, you know, any battles. So.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate, and talking about wars, that there are always wars in the world. No matter how you slice it, in some part of the world there's a war going on. There's skirmishes.
Yeah.
And it's sad. And, to this day, that dropping the bomb is a matter of very deep controversy. But sad to say that the Japanese people in the war were pretty brutal, too, to their prisoners.
Yeah, you know, I mean, sadly, there's always somebody who's not going to get along with somebody, be it, you know, political, you know, whatever, you know, race-wise, sports-wise. It just, some reason it always, but, you know, kind of along those lines, I wanted to ask you this. I asked Dan this yesterday. You know, the Florida State's attorney came out yesterday, and they dropped all their charges against Reuben Foster. You know, he was accused of domestic abuse. It's the second time. But now, you know, this one doesn't go on his record. I mean, there's, you know, he officially was never charged with anything. He's not guilty of anything. We're never really going to know what happened because it's his word against her word, and none of us were there. How long do you think the NFL has to suspend him to pacify everybody?
Well, you got to give him at least four games. And he should get more. I mean, I think there were some pictures circulating of the woman involved, and she was bruised pretty badly. But of course, what did she withdrew the charges? Is that what happened?
No, the state's attorney decided there was not enough evidence to proceed.
Yeah, and I can't understand that because I believe there were some fairly graphic pictures of her being her injuries. So that. I was quite confused when I saw the decision handed down. Unless she decided not to pursue charges herself, maybe that would be
factor
involved.
She was all for going after him. It was the state's attorney who decided that this wouldn't be taken care of at all. So
yeah, Now, is there preferential treatment involved with this, you think? Because he's a celebrity, he's a ball player. I don't know. They've prosecuted others over the years.
I guess the question is, maybe, as much as I hate to say it, they didn't believe her story.
Yeah, well, a lot of times that the stories are not accurate, and they're looking for money or other things, and custody involved and everything else of a child, but the women are always right, but I think more often than not, though, there has been some physical abuse, and I'm really surprised at the decision that they made this time.
Yeah. He hasn't played since week 8, so he missed the final 9 weeks of this season.
Right.
Now, he wasn't suspended or anything. Just the Redskins chose not to put him on the roster because the Redskins picked him up. And even when the Redskins picked him up, their GM said he had some inside information that he didn't think this case would be prosecuted. And turned out he was right. So, yeah, you think 4 games is enough after this then if they hit him with a 4-game suspension to start the year? Because I think Dan was at 3, so you guys are right around the same number.
Yeah, well, the reason I said that is that since there was no prosecution involved and he missed the last 8 or 9 weeks of the season, you figure that 4 would be enough because when you take that into consideration, it's still half a season plus 4 is what, 13 games, 14 games? That's a lot, especially since now he's been found not guilty. But I'm still, as I mentioned, very dubious about that decision.
And I know, he said, she said is always tough to prove, so you got to kind of be careful with these things. And obviously we'll never find out what the reason was that they didn't want to go to trial or court or, whatever they were going to go to. But, yeah, something had the prosecutor thinking that this just – wasn't going to pass an open court, which, like I said, I found weird because, like you mentioned, there were some photographs taken.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that was a little baffling, but.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking that we're talking about the Addison Russell situation, too. And was there ever any prosecution involved with him, or just the fact that he was suspended for all those games, but nothing. He was not prosecuted by law. Is that
no.
What your understanding?
No, his wife. I think she was his wife at the time. Never filed charges on him.
But she certainly had a lot to say about it, and I think I may have sent you some of those articles that she wrote and talked about, and quite disturbing if true.
Yeah, well, the tough part with that is that story strung out for so long because, that started a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And, he wasn't willing to press anything at the time, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, it was like, oh, okay, I want to complain about him now. So that was a little weird.
Yeah, yeah. It's once again, it's difficult, and we'll see if he could rebound from that. He'll still have a decent career in that major.
As always, big thanks for listening to me live. So remember, all you have to do is go over to TV.com and let's see if that's not long.